Hey, everybody, and welcome to an athlete analysis with Coach Chad Timmerman here from Trainer Road.
Hi, everybody.
And also, we have a special guest, and in this series, you'll get to see athletes, whether they're near or far, in this case, very near, one of our product managers, Brandon Need. How you doing?
Hello.
This is where we're going to, more or less, I'm kind of like a strange referee in this one, I guess, in some respects.
Just the moderate.
Guiding the conversation, I guess, in some respects. But really, this is more about Coach Chad here and Brandon and you guys coming together and kind of going over your annual plan. At times, we'll be going over like a specific performance that somebody did. Mm-hmm. So we'll kind of go through that, whether it be through Skype or having the person here. But the point is, there's a ton to be learned from analyzing yourself as an athlete and then the planning process and having a secondary person in there, which hopefully this podcast serves as that, kind of educating you on the process that we use when we go about this, either it's personally or Chad through the many athletes that he's coached. So yeah, we're going to do it with Brandon Need here. You may have heard us mention Brandon on the Ask a Cycling Coach podcast before, an extremely fast climber and a history in triathlon. We're going to get into all of that, but really we're kind of going to go through your annual plan, more so to speak, this year and go through that and I guess drum one up, so to speak.
Yeah. So first we're going to start with an athlete interview, which is pretty close equivalent to what I used to do back in the day. So it's been a while since I've done this. I'm not sure how well it'll translate to to a podcast. I think it'll work quite well.
Cool.
And then, of course, we're going to be really specific with Brandon, but a lot of this should be general in the sense that you can at least contemplate these questions and consider some of the things we're going to talk about. And, you know, whether you meet with a coach ever or not, these are at least questions you need to ask yourself, most of them, at least at some point in time. And at the beginning of a training season is about the best time to do it.
So I guess we should probably start with Brandon's background, right?
Yep.
Kind of getting a feel on that.
Yeah. And so I'm just going to, let me roll through this just like I would in terms of an athlete interview, because everything kind of happens in a particular sequence.
Perfect.
And then, having done quite a few of these, some of them are super conversational. Some of them are really rigid and it's just, I get the necessary information and then I go my way and do what I need to do. But I'm sure this will veer more towards the former. So, No wrong answers. No, not really even good answers. I just need answers. If there's any answers that fall short, that's why we're here. And that's also where the coaching process begins. You know, these are all things we can get clear on over time. We don't have to figure it all out today. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I guess first thing, is a self-assessment. How would you describe yourself as a rider? And let's focus on, three kind of aspects of that, right?
Yeah. So in this case, right at the start of the interview, I just asked the rider to tell him or herself about me, and I don't want them to go into great high level of specifics. I just want them to give me their greatest strength, their greatest weakness, and what they consider their greatest liability or limiter.
Okay.
So strength.
So greatest strength. I'm a small guy. So many of you can probably, many of you can probably guess just by looking at me. It's probably the sustained climbing.
Okay. That makes sense. What about a weakness, or where do you find yourself in a weak position when you're racing?
Probably anything that has a lot of wind in it. I tend to get blown around a lot in the wind and it can be tough to hide in that situation.
Okay. And part of that's due to the fact that you're a light rider, but also maybe you don't position yourself well. Is that an issue?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'd say so.
Cool.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that.
So on the limiter side of things, what would you say is your biggest limiter as a bike racer?
Probably racecraft.
Yeah.
Just because in the limited amount of time that I have spent actually racing, I have kind of gone out and really targeted specific races. Mm-hmm. I think Nate has talked in the past a lot about the fact that if you want to go and race and you live in Reno, it's probably going to be a six hour trip, round trip to go and get over the pass, do the race, and then come back.
Yeah.
It's a one day.
Exactly. Yeah. And I haven't done a lot of really just going out and just doing a ton of races. So the ones that I do well, I have a good plan and I have a pretty good idea that I'm going to do well. And fortunately, that hasn't required me to be super crafty, but that's also potentially an issue when it comes down.
Horses for horses, you pick races you know you have a chance of doing well at, and nobody can fault you for that.
Yep.
So, and it's
got it. So, those identifying those three things: the strength, weakness, and then your limiter that you have. That's a good place to start. Mm-hmm. Going from there, I guess you usually want to get into more of the history of the athlete a little bit.
Yeah.
More.
So then, typically I could handle something like this on a bio, which, he just gives to me or fills out prior to the interview and then gives to me. And then I digest it and move from there. But instead, we're going to do this live. So we're going to put Brandon on the spot, and none of this is particularly personal. So it's all pretty straightforward stuff. In terms of over the course of your career, I don't know how long you've worked with Power. Well, let's ask you that right now. Mm-hmm. How long have you used
I've had a Power Meter for probably 6 years or so.
Okay,
so cool. Some time.
Back into your triathlon days and getting ahead a little bit, but triathlon days and your road racing days.
Yep, exactly. Cool.
Okay, so do you have a historic career high PR or for strength to weight?
Yeah, it was actually this past year. So right around 5.2 watts per kilo. So I think weight-wise, I was right around 136.
Okay.
That's like 61.8.
Yeah, right around
or something
there.
Like that.
Okay. Yep.
And then I think 320. Okay.
So big old engine.
Yeah, holy cow, that's impressive. Those are numbers that like, so Brandon, we're starting with Brandon as like the first athlete on doing something like this.
Yes.
Setting the bar high.
It only goes down from here, folks.
But the point is, it's having this starting point. So if you're the type of person that's watching this and kind of taking notes because you want to go through this process for yourself, whatever your ratio is, whatever that career best, that's where we go.
That's just historic information. So that's where we can see in Brandon's case that he's got a big capacity. Mm-hmm. So if he had told me, you know, something 3 watts per kilogram, we would take a different trajectory than we will with someone who's 5+ watts a kg.
Right, right. So that was the previous year. In some cases, though, an athlete might have a situation where their PR was long since passed, right? It might be mm-hmm. multiple years back.
Yeah, and that's particularly interesting because the next question was, what was your previous year stats? And now we know his previous year stats were his best stats of all time. So we're probably riding a high right now, which is super cool because it means motivation's probably up, which means your training dedication's probably up, which means you're probably ideally going into this season starting on a higher base than you started last season. All these things are good.
Yeah. So I guess last year, adding on to, we know the data in terms of the strength to weight, but I guess it's also important to kind of get a performance perspective in terms of like, what was the main goal and how it went, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
For last year.
Discuss.
So what was your goal race last year and how did it go with that sort of power to weight?
Yeah. So last year, again, I wanted to focus on stage race type stuff because that usually suits me well, something with hills and or time trials. Lighter on the crit type of stuff. So my first goal was San Dimas stage race. So I am currently a Cat 2. They have a Cat 2 only race. That stage race suits me very well. It starts with of the two things I said I like to do, time trials and uphill stuff. There's an uphill time trial on the first stage. So it's about a 15-minute climb. That went really well. I was leading the race by probably 30 seconds or so. Mm-hmm. And then next stage is rolling road race. I lost the lead there.
Oh, man.
Substantially or by?
Substantially.
Okay.
So it's kind of a funny story about how that happened. We were cruising along, all basically in one pack. And this race is unfortunately, it's notorious for this scenario happening. So they start the pros after us, five minutes after us. Mm-hmm. And probably 9 times out of 10, the pro field will catch the Cat 2 field.
So what happens in that scenario is you guys have to neutralize, right? Mm-hmm. And you kind of like, the race is not put on hold in terms of you stopping. I guess in some cases it could, but you usually just stay where you are or move to the side of the road and you let that other race go by.
Mm, let it migrate by.
Yeah.
And that's usually mandated by officials.
Yeah.
Right. So like officials will end up, you know, waving a flag or calling it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what happened in this case?
So unfortunately the timing was really terrible and we were probably a third of the way through our last lap. There was one guy up the road. I like to say it was only like 5 seconds, but I mean, it could have been a bit further than that, but it certainly wasn't a long ways off the front. Just given the fact that it was so late in the race, you know, there wasn't anyone that was going to,
people were marking each other pretty closely.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, we were completely stopped, by the race official.
Oh, so he got away?
And he got away, unfortunately.
It's a hard pill to swallow.
Yeah. So, going into that stage, like I said, was probably 30 seconds up. Coming out of it was 2 minutes down.
Okay.
With only the crit to come later.
That occurrence aside, did the rolling nature of the course challenge you, or was it? Did it suit you still?
It still suited me pretty well. I just kind of...
Were they pitchy, punchy climbs, or just kind of rolled smoothly?
There's one really punchy climb. They do a King of the Mountains jersey at that race as well. And it's probably just one climb that's, I don't know, it gets up to 10 or 12% probably at the end, but it's only a minute or two.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So it's short.
And you hung in there on that just fine?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Just really stayed out of trouble. Once I had, the lead after the initial first stage, that was my goal all along, was just to hang on to that jersey.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So you ended up second at that race, right, in GC overall?
And the criterium, you just finished same time as everyone else?
Yeah. I just stayed out of trouble.
Yep.
I've been kind of notorious for being a tail gunner in the crits.
That's okay. That's kind of what GC guys do when it comes to criteriums woven into stage races. And that's not a real common occurrence. You don't see it,
right. It
really anywhere but the United States. I don't know. I mean, maybe some Canadian
stage
races, but it's not common in Europe. I know that. Certainly not in grand stages or grand tours.
Yeah. Definitely not common. So you got second there. Mm-hmm. Would you consider that still like a success in that race? Like, or where do you... Do you consider that a failure?
Definitely a success. I was, you know, all my training and everything into it went really well. And, you know, at this point, you know, that's really a big point that I marked myself on is, okay, did I do everything I needed to prepare properly? Even if the result didn't turn out perfectly, you know, can still be very happy about how the race went.
Yeah.
And that was a 3-stage race over 3 days?
Yep. Yeah. Okay. So it was a bit of a shorter stage race. Sure. I've definitely done longer ones. The other race that I had lined up to do was the Cascade Cycling Classic, and they unfortunately had to cancel that one.
Yeah,
that's too bad. That's too bad. That would have been, based on how well you did at San Dimas, I'm guessing you would have done quite well at Cascade too.
Yeah. So at this point, Chad, do you try to get into what the rider's currently at? Like now that we have the past broken
down? So I mean, so that's, we looked at how it went during his best year and his last year, which just happened to be the same thing. And then, you know, what, depending on when my services would intervene in the, mm-hmm. in the athlete's season, we would discuss how it's gone so far, unless of course we're starting from scratch. Cool. But you're well into your training leading up to, when's your first event?
It will likely be San Dimas as well. So, but that's not until March.
March, okay.
I've certainly got a lot of time. This year has gotten off to a little bit of a slower start. I was sick for almost all of November.
Okay.
When last year I was looking back, and that was a full-on training month.
Gotcha. So when do you typically start your base training if you want to be sharp in March?
Probably middle of October, I'd say.
Makes sense when you're talking about that. Usually the base build specialty somewhere around 28 weeks.
Yeah, in terms of what we do here, it's a good trajectory, a good sequencer. Yeah,
cycle. Absolutely. So I guess at this point you were sick through November, but at this point your training, is it back on track yet?
Not quite.
Okay.
So I think probably in a couple of weeks I'll be getting to the point where I can actually start training.
Yeah.
Because usually when I take time off, I really take time off. It's usually 2 weeks to a month where I'm doing absolutely nothing. Mm-hmm. I know that in the past, when I do take off time like this, I lose a ton. Mm-hmm. So this year so far, I've now probably got a month or so of training under my belt, but that's all been just kind of going in and kind of banging my head against the wall. I like to set my threshold to what it was in the past and just kind of spend a couple weeks really just kind of hurting.
Okay.
Cutting a lot of workouts short.
No, so as a coach, I try not to discourage experimentation, and maybe this is something you haven't done before and you want to give it a shot and see if it pans out. Mm-hmm. But drawing on experience working with athletes and just during my own training, I would absolutely recommend reassessing. And even if you don't want to reassess, I would at least scale my workouts down to what felt like sweet spot should feel or what the workouts should feel like. I wouldn't just make myself try to live up the same high standards, considering the energy systems I'm going to end up targeting are probably not the ones I'm seeking.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Yeah.
So in terms of numbers right now, you're at 139.5 pounds. So you're gained about 2 kilos, 2.5 kilos, somewhere around there, right? And then 285 for your FTP. Is that right?
Yep. So I did. I did eventually actually turn it down. Okay. I did about two. I did about 2 weeks where, yeah, two weeks where I was kind of hitting it, which felt more like, well, the efforts were threshold as opposed to sweet spot, yeah. Mm-hmm. Just to get a general feel for training again, and then I brought it back down to what I felt like feels like sweet spot for the time being.
Cool.
That's
yeah.
Yep. Cool.
And see you. Maybe not a whole lot of experience in the road racing realm, but you do have a lot of training experience, so you can do that by feel pretty well, I'm guessing.
Yeah, that's a good point. We should kind of get into this. It's like kind of us burying the lead with
Brandon. Yeah, yeah. So
he's kind of, he's got a storied past.
He does. So you've competed for quite some time in triathlon. You've been to the Olympic Training Center under the tutelage of coaches who actually wanted to see if you were ready to compete at a world level. Is that correct?
That's correct. So I started out as a runner all through high school, and then I walked on at Cal Poly. So I spent a little bit of time running there, and that's when I kind of started to get into cycling and a little bit into triathlon. The summer after that is really when I started road racing, just a little bit. And after that, I kind of just dove right into the triathlon stuff.
Okay.
I'll be the first to say I just wasn't going to quite make it in the running scene, and that's perfectly fine.
Yeah.
Fortunately, I found the collegiate recruitment program by USA Triathlon. I was very fortunate that they brought me on. And shortly after that, I was brought out to the Olympic Training Center. I spent
that was a cool experience.
Sure.
Yeah. It was.
I'm sure.
It was incredible. So yeah. I spent the summer there. And near the end of the summer, they did some testing on us to kind of determine if we were going to keep on going with the program or if we were going to be sent home.
Yeah.
Based off those tests, which I unfortunately don't know the results of, I was asked to stay. Stayed on with that program for probably another 6 months. We ended up moving down to Arizona, and after some time there is when I kind of had to make the decision to come back to Reno.
Okay, and at that point, I guess taking a couple steps back as a runner, just to give people kind of some perspective, what was your best 10K split? I don't know if you were focusing on that sort of pace.
Yeah, what distance runner were you first off?
Yeah.
Well, based off of high school, you know, we do mile, 2 mile, and then in college, I was gonna be a 5K, 10K runner.
Okay.
And what were your times or what are your PRs on those distances?
So I was right at 4:20 for the mile.
Okay.
Certainly not one of the best in the country, but good enough to be able to walk on to a college program. Mm-hmm.
Got it.
And then 5K, I was just under 15 minutes for 5K.
Fast.
And then 10K, which I didn't run until I had started doing tri stuff, was in the low 32s.
Okay. So from the start, you've been obviously a high level athlete.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you transitioned into triathlon, I'm guessing that went pretty well. I mean,
yeah, definitely. Okay. It's kind of funny. I'm still convinced to this day that I can run a faster 10K off the bike than I can stand alone.
Interesting.
Now I'm sure that's probably not true, but I've convinced myself it's true.
Okay. So were you targeting Olympic distance with triathlon?
Yep. Yeah, okay. Definitely.
And the Olympics themselves, correct?
Yeah. The Olympics themselves. So it's a little bit different than a traditional triathlon where you're on a TT bike, there's no drafting, anything like that. The draft legal format is what they have in the Olympics. So basically it's
criterium. Well,
yeah, it's essentially a criterium on the bike. So everyone rides together. Now some of the unique challenges with that are that it makes your swim so much more important, because if you're not making the front group, in the bike, your day's as good as done.
It's like watching a criterium roll away from you and starting a minute or two later.
Yeah, that's nobody ever wants to do that. Nobody wants to give a crit a head start.
Not so much, no.
Yeah. So I guess, this is kind of diverging a bit, but I guess this would be important information too. What made you drift away from triathlon and just consider road racing?
It's a new challenge? Were you burnt on triathlon?
I started to get a little bit burnt out, especially I think with running. You know, doing it for, I don't know, 10, 12 years, you start to get a little bit burnt out on it.
Sure. It wasn't inspired by injury though.
No. I've been very fortunate to not ever really be injured with running or anything like that. Obviously swimming. Yeah, you get a little bit tired staring at a black line.
Yeah, I can see that. That's for sure.
Okay, so it's clear that you're a high level athlete. So when you went from running to triathlon and then triathlon to cycling, you saw a really rapid ascendancy, which isn't going to be common. Obviously, most of us are going to have to work much longer and harder. Well, I won't say harder, but definitely longer than you did. So it's not to say you can't take away, or y'all listening can't take away a lot from what we're about to discuss right here, but just recognize he's on a more rapid timeline.
Yeah. So at this point, looking at your training moving forward, you've got a single sport focus, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just focusing on cycling?
Yes, exactly.
Got it. Okay. So that makes sense. Do you still do any running? Because I know in the past you've done some running just like on the side, kind of like to keep things going. Are you going to be doing any of that this year, or are you just cycling?
I'm just going to do cycling.
Okay, nice.
So, I know I've been a little bit indecisive about this in the past, and I think that's one of those things. It's even last year after I finished San Dimas, I was like, oh, maybe I'll do a triathlon.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll start up running and swimming again.
From a cycling coach's perspective, that's music to my ears. I want to hear that you're focused on nothing but cycling. It makes my job a heck of a lot easier, and and it's going to make your training a heck of a lot more effective.
Darn sure. At this point, I guess you're kind of looking at the constraints then, right? Because you know the focus is cycling. Now it's constraint time around the training.
So this is about the point in the conversation where we move on to how much can you train a week? And if you have a history, how much can you tolerate in a week? Because just because you have 20, 25 hours doesn't mean you should train 20, 25 hours. And then we base that decision, or at least, base it on past experience. So we can see, you know, if he's training 20, 25 hours a week, how do you tolerate it? What sort of stress scores were you seeing? What sort of work were you doing? And this is where we start to paint a portrait of your history so we can see basically, you know, where to steer you. And again, just how rapidly we can increase the training load, what we can expect from you over the course of early and later training.
So I guess starting with the weekly time that you have available to train, how much you work a full-time job here, and it's a demanding job, but how much time do you set aside for training in the week?
Probably 10 to 15 hours. That's definitely, I think, pretty high. But I've also gone as high as 20 before and not seen any adverse effects of that.
Okay. Were you getting faster with that additional 5-10 hours a week? 10, I imagine, but 5?
Not a ton.
Okay.
So I think there's kind of that sweet spot of the...
Agreed. Cool.
That's a good point.
Yeah. And we're going to... Typically, you'll find that with any rider or athlete, but you just happen to find it at probably a higher weekly training load.
Yeah. And it's not all about time either. You know, I mean, it's about like what you're actually doing during that. Do you have an idea a little bit behind like the actual TSS, the training stress that you carry, that you can, I guess, tolerate in terms of like a max limit?
Yeah, definitely. So max limit is probably 900 to 1,000. And again, this is a rarity. It's not, all right, I'm going to go out and hit 1,000 every week.
Sure.
Yeah. Typically, probably anywhere from 5 to 8 is a good spot for me.
Okay.
I know if I'm really just trying to ramp up for a big race, I'll usually go 700 or 800 in kind of back-to-back weeks, but then I'll back it way down.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So from the start, that tells me as a coach that you can tolerate a heavy training load. So super, super vital information. And then I don't know that we asked yet how old you are.
Oh, yeah, we didn't do that.
No.
How old are you, Brandon?
I'll be 28 at the end of this month.
Okay, so cool. You're still a young athlete too. So it's probably, it stands to reason that you can probably tolerate such a high training load for a while longer yet.
Yeah. And yeah. So an interesting point on this is that, so Brandon, you're analytical, you understand this stuff. I mean, you drive much of the ship in terms of product development here at Trainer Road, right? But for plenty of folks, you may not know exactly where you sit in terms of max tolerable stress, that sort of stuff. Mm. So Chad, if you had an athlete and you had access to their data, in other words, walking a person through this, because you can't coach everybody, it just doesn't happen that way. You're only one man. So how would you try to tell a person when they're looking at a training stress chart to try to understand where maybe their ceilings are? Are there certain things that you would look at, whether it be effects in their life or whether it be drops in TSS?
You can glean a lot from an annual chart. So if they have good historic data and you can overlay multiple previous years, it paints a really defined picture. Mm. It can be really helpful. It's not often the case, and more and more these days. And that's kind of a sad fact for me because I don't coach individuals anymore. And when I did, historic data was really hard to come by. If anything, it was a training log, and most people didn't have training logs. So in this day and age, a lot of athletes probably have multiple years of data to draw upon. And if you've retained it all and were good about calibrating your power meter, and you trust that the data is pretty sound, you can learn a ton. And this is where we can look at charts and say, what explains this dip in performance? What explains why did your chronic load or your 6 week average drop so far here? What happened? And we can see how quickly it ramps up and what happens when we ramp it quickly. I mean, there's just a lot of information to cull.
Yeah.
From that resource.
If I could throw out a few things that I've learned in analyzing this and trying to find my limits, it's don't look at that 1 week where you went to a training camp and out of the blue you had 900 TSS and think that I can do that.
It's not very telling.
Like you said, look at the 6 week average. So it's really easy with Trainer Road because you just look at that training stress chart and that line trends and you'll see it. But look at a point where you were progressively ramping up your volume and then look to see where that started to diminish and try to understand why. And what I find is that if it's trending upward and then it starts to drop off like a cliff like that, many times I become sick, I do those sort of things, and that really happens once I start getting to the point where I'm trying to run the knife's edge and tolerating too much.
If you're a self-coach athlete, then you have to relentlessly keep subjective data. You have to keep a journal that goes along with all the power data you're accumulating. If you're working with a coach, you have to communicate that to your coach, and you're probably doing that via the same method. You're logging it and your coach is reading over it later. But in any case, that data has to be retained too, and it's really important. Data.
Ride notes.
Because the chart only tells you so much. I mean, my performance tanked here, but what else was going on other than the training load and the changes in training?
Some things that I keep track of on every single thing with ride notes, just when I finish the ride, I type in the notes there. I usually try to make the title something unique and something that indicates something that I can see. So then at a glance, it's easier to see what that ride was.
Sure.
But then in the ride notes, I record how much sleep I got, when the last meal was, and what it was. And then thereafter, I record how I felt. Because the data tells me what I did.
I like all those
but
things.
Then I like how I felt thereafter.
Yeah. I'm a little less concerned with the nutrition side just because it's really hard to manage all aspects of an athlete, though that is a vital one. So I just like the how I felt and the amount of sleep. That's pretty important too. Yeah. Now I probably lean more towards heart rate variability, but those two things certainly go hand in hand. So little bits of data and those are objective bits, but the subjective, how I felt, how I felt it's prior to the workout, important. During the workout, after the workout, if you can share those three things, that goes a long ways towards helping you track your subjective data.
So back to training stress, have you noticed like a floor of training stress where basically like if you aren't doing X amount, you don't see a change in your fitness?
Probably around 400 or 500.
Okay.
That's usually where I start and then just kind of ramp up from there always.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. I guess, what would you say is next, Chad, after you outline stress constraints?
And once whether I review historic data or we just talk about, what you've tolerated in the past and, he has very specific information, which is really helpful. Mm-hmm. I try to get a few, a little less data-driven and more touchy-feely. One of those things is, are you good at reining yourself in? So, I mean, if you're good at it, then I know it's probably going to be a little easier from my position as a coach to help you tone things down when I see that, the things are starting to go downhill. So how would you describe yourself in terms of knowing when it's too much, when you need to back off?
Hmm. I've definitely gotten a whole heck of a lot better at this over time. And I think it is definitely something that takes a lot of time to be able to be able to know. I mean, I can even go back to when I was at the Olympic Training Center. This was bad, and if they found out about this, they'd probably be pretty upset. But we had a group of us that we had a motto. It was no easy days and no days off.
That's effective training.
Yeah, for probably
for a short period of time.
Yeah, for about 3 days.
For probably that whole summer, we kind of had that motto, and we just hammered each other into the ground every single day.
That's one of the many benefits of youth right there.
Yeah, exactly. It worked out okay. But I mean, there's always the argument that, hey, if we would have relaxed a little bit more, maybe we could have been a whole lot faster. Mm-hmm. You know, on the other side of that.
Question, isn't it?
Yeah. I was also known for every Sunday, that was our lightest day. Mm-hmm. We would do our long run, and then I would go to breakfast, I would eat a ton, and then I'd go to my room and I'd sleep all day. Huh. Until dinner.
Interesting.
So that was kind of my way.
And then go to bed after dinner?
Yep.
Huh. Recover hard.
Yep.
That makes sense.
Exactly. But nowadays, I've gotten a whole lot better at being able to judge when it's time to back it off. That usually comes from kind of just looking at the training and knowing where I am in my training. When I'm doing that 600, 700, 800 kind of ramp leading up into a big race, usually I'll know, hey, this session is going to be really tough. Mm-hmm. I know it is. That's okay. That's a good thing.
You should resign yourself to it.
But there's other times when it's, okay, I'm just doing, you know, an easier session. It should feel, you know, just moderate. Mm-hmm. And if that feels absolutely terrible, I know that, okay, something's wrong. I probably need to shut it down. I've gotten a whole lot better at that in the last couple of years.
I think you developed a knack for saving your best performances for races. And I remember a while back you told me that you don't leave it on the table, all on the table when it comes to training, that you recognize when I could do more today, but I want to save that performance for a race day. And I always found that to be a really interesting perspective.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a really good point. Saving it, even psychologically, that can be really beneficial.
Yeah. But I think you know your body well enough to know that physiologically, there's a little more gas in the tank. There's a little more, I can do a little more today, but I'm going to save it. And that's absolutely a product of experience, mm-hmm. being able to know yourself that well. But at some point you had to kind of figure that out for yourself. So
trial and error.
That's what I find really interesting that you did stumble onto that.
So the reason that this is important is if you're an athlete listening to this and you're trying to go through the process of reviewing yourself and then setting everything forward, the thing that's interesting about this to me is the fact that if you know, if you can say when is too much, right? If you actually can say that you know where those limits are and you can respect them, and that's extremely important, because otherwise you could find yourself in a situation where you just you stick to the plan regardless of circumstance outside in your life, and you mm-hmm. find yourself being tired. So that's why we've spent some time on this one. It's important to understand how good you are at weighing those subjective variables that come in. I guess one other thing that you'd want to touch on is strength training.
Yeah, so there are a couple almost housekeeping questions that I would ask just to know if, you know, for whatever reason, your schedule did accommodate strength training, or if we had a little time to pursue something other than work on the mm-hmm. bike. Do you have a facility to do it? We also have to determine whether or not we feel that's going to benefit you as an athlete. Is this a proper way to spend your time? But either way, I get that out of the.
Yeah.
Just make sure that's out there. Do you have a gym? Are you averse to strength training? Have you strength trained?
I have strength trained a bit in the past. It's been primarily just core and stabilization type mm-hmm. stuff. No really heavy lifting. I'm not currently doing that right now, but.
And do you have access to equipment and whatnot?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's more of a checkbox than anything, and it could come into play. Yeah. It all depends on, you know, what limits this rider and what the rider's goals are.
Something I'd throw into this that works really well into this is any history of like recurring injuries with joints and that sort of stuff too.
Yeah. That's you really address that right there. This, the right? fact that you haven't ever really dealt with serious injury or big injury setbacks, I might actually for once not concern myself too much with strength training. I use strength training to address mm-hmm. weaknesses in the body in general. And if you don't really seem to be exhibiting any, I'm not sure I would prioritize strength training.
So on the equipment side, is that something that you want to know as well?
Yes, only to the extent that I want to know if they're equipment limited. If they have, you know, they're riding a 20-year-old bike with baskets on the pedals sort of thing. Yeah. I want to rule out the fact that that could be something that's seriously impairing their performance. And I also want to know, in the case of a road racer and especially a stage racer, do you have a dedicated TT bike?
Yeah. So what's your main bike?
So my road bike is a Trekkamonda SLR. So
you have a climbing bike.
Yep. Climbing bike, not aero at all.
Very
but,
light.
Very light, very stiff, responsive.
And do you have a TT bike?
I used to, not anymore.
But you have access to one.
I do have access.
And you can train on one.
Yep.
That's mine.
Yeah.
Hey, both good bits of info.
Yeah.
And this is, I guess, also if this person was new to cycling or anything else like that, or perhaps if they had injuries, you'd probably ask if they've had a bike fit recently or something like that.
Yeah, sure.
In the spot,
stuff like
this,
that.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
If you are the type of person that's experiencing injury, that sort of stuff, we have plenty of stuff where we've talked about strength training on the Ask a Cycling Coach podcast. You can check that out. Just recently, episode 191, we talked a whole lot about it. And we even have a video on some strength training exercises that we recommend. And then if you haven't gotten a bike fit or anything else like that, that's a really tough one in terms of recommendations, but you have to find, first of all, it has to be feasible. So you have to be able to see that bike fitter. So whether that means they're local or regional, whatever it is, but then try to get as many points of information in terms of other people that have had bike fits to try to find the best one. And once again, bike fitting is a bit of a black magic with a lot of folks. So who knows, you may go to some wizard who might put you in a weird position, but it would be important to find out, because if your athlete is, you're going to be dosing your athlete with a lot of training and they're not in the right position, they could be, you know, getting injuries. It'd be bad.
Yeah, for sure.
So I guess strengths and weaknesses.
Yeah. So this is a point in the interview where I'd move on to strengths, weaknesses, and limiters.
Cool.
In terms of strengths, just typically a lot of this I can get from data review, but if I haven't done data review, we just acquire the information via an interview. Mm-hmm. And so you tell me, you know, what, list your strengths, tell me what you think you're particularly good at, what you employ and works for you out on the race course.
Like we said earlier, sustained power climbs, long climbs,
so and then also like 20-minute plus type.
Yeah,
type
20 of climbing. 20 minutes plus up to, you know, even over an hour. So definitely long stuff. Mm. Also, really short, really steep stuff. So talking 10% plus for anywhere from a minute to 5 minutes.
Okay.
So you're not just a diesel, you have some punch in you.
A little bit.
Yeah, it sounds like he's got a big aerobic capacity.
Right. Yeah. That makes sense. Now, once again, if you're the athlete that's going through this, you probably know where you're good and where you're not good, because you either succeed or you get dropped in your race. So this is where you're kind of really figuring out those sort of details.
Yeah.
That's what you're weighing.
And having said that, it actually indicates a big anaerobic capacity too. So those short efforts, there's a big anaerobic contribution. And the fact that you can, I'm guessing, repeat those, that's not kind of a one and done sort of thing. You don't save it till the end of the race. You can actually sprinkle them throughout a race.
Yes, okay. Absolutely.
So how about on the weaknesses and limiters sides, where do you find yourself? And we're talking more contextually, I guess, in this case, in terms of where in the race this sort of thing happens. Where do you find yourself once again at in a spot where you're limited or exposing a weakness?
Flat stuff, obviously. Mm-hmm. Flat stuff, you know, stuff where I have to sprint, windy things. Sometimes the more technical stuff will get to me. Like if there's a technical crit, you know, I can certainly have gaps open up that I'll have to close. So.
Okay. So your pack riding skills probably leave a bit to be desired.
Yeah.
Which is again, just a question or a matter of the fact that you haven't been doing this very long.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And like I said, a lot of times when I am in the pack, I'll be, you know, just tail gunning it a little bit.
Yeah. So is that based on your lack of confidence in your handling abilities? Is it a fear-based thing? Are you just afraid to get in the mix? What explains it?
maybe a little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit of fear-based there. You know, it certainly is tough riding with people that you're not used to riding with. It's certainly different when we have our Saturday group ride, when it's the same guys that you ride with all the time.
Yeah, you have to put a lot of faith in other people's capabilities, of which you know virtually nothing about in most cases. So that's a tough thing to get over.
Yeah.
Okay, and then I thought of something and I lost it. Just keep on going.
Yeah, I think, so I guess looking into, that's on the hilly and flat stuff, I guess, you know, you mentioned the fact that the technical abilities may be limiting you. but it seems like I'm looking through, you kind of made some notes here and you talk about really scenarios where I see where a big power output would would benefit you. That's where you find your limiters, which makes sense because you're a smaller athlete. So in this case,
so big raw watts.
Yeah, there's low raw watts, but low power, so fast climber. So in this scenario, Chad, since he's a smaller athlete, what are you thinking when you see this? Do you think that that's a problem that he wants to address, or that's just the nature of it?
Not yet. Not excuse me. Not at this point in the interview, simply because I don't know what you're after, what your goals are yet. We haven't gotten there yet. So right now you talk about targeting races where they play to your strengths. And if that's what you're going to continue doing, then I think, everything is about as right as it's going to be.
Yeah.
However, if you plan on pursuing a different course, different direction, then that's when we're going to start to address the fact that maybe you can bring up your raw power more. Although at your size, being at 320,
that's pretty high, man.
That is pretty high.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to get another athlete on this that is just like an athlete that's like a cyclocross specific athlete or a track athlete, and they want to do Leadville or something.
Yeah.
That'll be interesting because we get to see somebody that's totally on the opposite end.
So when we talk weaknesses and limiters, just to clarify, weaknesses is something you're not particularly good at. A limiter is also, but a limiter actually limits your race performance. Mm. So weaknesses might not be a big concern. Limiters pretty much always are a big concern.
Yep.
So I look at, hilly versus flat races, or do you struggle in them? How are you on long rides? How well do you climb? Long climbs, short, steep climbs. Can you surge? Can you surge going up a hill? Can you surge during a run-in on a sprint? Can you surge during a long sustained effort and then settle back into that sustained effort? When it comes to time trials, do you prefer hill climbs, flat and rolling, flat or rolling, windy courses, et cetera? So this is when we would nail down specifics of the rider in terms of, again, a weakness is one thing. It might not be a concern. A limiter is almost always a concern. And we don't necessarily have to do that with Brandon. We can kind of pick over this a little bit and pull out interesting things. But those are the questions that I would ask a prospective client. And these are questions that you need to ask yourself and then steer those findings at what sort of races you want to do or what sort of races you want to be good at.
Yeah. A weakness for me would be swimming in a manner where I don't drown. So, but it's not a limiter because I don't do triathlon.
Exactly. Right? That's a perfect example. There it is.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess time to get into racing and his goals, right?
Yeah.
We have the background all set out. And once again, when you're looking through your performance and you're analyzing this with historical data that you have, and you're being honest with yourself, you're looking back at ride logs or you're looking back at race performances, you're figuring out everything that we've just figured out. You've got all that down. Now at this point, we're starting to look ahead. So on the racing side of things, what are your goal races for 2019?
So I'd like to go back to San Dimas. Sweet. Again, hopefully
win it this time.
Hopefully win it this time.
Yeah.
And then
in the tattoos again.
In the Cat 2s again, Cascade Cycling Classic. They announced, I think last month, that they are bringing it back.
Cool. Hey, good.
So cool. as long as that's still on, then I certainly want to do that.
Yeah.
And then potentially the Hote Route Rockies.
Ooh, that would be sweet.
We'll see.
Okay, yeah. With the intention of placing well, not just completing it, racing it.
Exactly. Okay. Yep.
That one could really play to your strengths once again, because a lot of
all three of those do.
Yep.
So you're climbing. Still targeting events that you're already good at. So you're not. There's no big shift in your training trajectory.
Right. And then I guess a bigger overarching goal is I would like to get my Cat 1.
Okay.
So I think if I do well at these two races, it can get me the points that I need to. But again, I could potentially be chasing some points, which in the long run could be a good thing.
Sure.
Because it'll require me to do some other races that I'm not as comfortable with.
Gotcha.
And get you some more experience.
Left side of your wheelhouse, yeah. So, and then for those who don't know, stage race points, especially highly contested stage races with big fields, yield big points.
Yeah.
So you can get a whole lot of points toward an upgrade by doing well at an individual stages of a stage race and at an overall in a stage race.
We have a blog post actually on that, on how to get upgrade points within the USAC system, at least, USA Cycling System, on blog.trainerroad.com. I guess now that we know the races that are the goals, what's the next step?
Yeah. So then, excuse me, I'd talk about other just random. It gets a little more random after this. I mean, I still want to know more about you as a racer, and it might delve into things like tactics and strategies and how well you understand them. And those are largely things that we kind of dissect after an event. But mm-hmm. you know, if you have kept race journals, or you know, you've done San Dimas, we can look at San Dimas and start discussing where do you think you got it right, where do you think you got it wrong, and then a lot of tactics and strategies unfold in the heat of the action. You got to figure that stuff out as you go, and that goes so much back to experience. But you can also glean or gain a lot of insight just by watching races, talking to other races, reading forums, watching. I mean, there's a wealth of information on YouTube that we just stumbled onto. I think that NorCal race or something like that.
Yeah, NorCal, like plenty of folks. Yeah,
just play-by-play race dissection where they go over their GoPro footage and some of the insights. I mean, you find that one in particular, a lot of good learnings are available there.
So this is something that you would suggest to the athlete to try to fortify that side of things.
If he or she were to cite that as a limiter, and it is a limiter with all of us, really. I mean, mm-hmm. if you want to be a competitive stage racer or road racer, tactic and strategy, you can always improve on those. Mm-hmm. There's always something to be learned there.
Would you also recommend that Brandon do some more races perhaps before San Dimas, being if San Dimas is like his main goal, to accrue more experience?
Absolutely. Like if for no other reason, just learning to be relaxed in the field. So you're not spending a lot of energy riding at the back or trying to, move up in the field. I mean, just brushing up on your pack riding skills because those are so vital to energy conservation. If you're nervous in the field, if you're not comfortable being placed in the places that are the most sheltered, if you don't know how to move up through the field, if you don't know how to corner in a group, these are all things that absolutely need to be addressed, or you're going to be giving advantages to your competitors.
Yeah. It'll just happen whether you like it or not. Yeah. On the descending side of things, let's say that an athlete, so you mentioned that like on the technical side of things, that might be a limiter. What would you recommend that the athlete, you could learn from the same methods like we've just talked about, but is there anything else that you recommend specifically for that?
With things like descending and cornering, that's best learned through experience. You can't just read about it and be good at it. You have to go out there and apply it. And that comes down to actual on-the-road coaching or just riding with good riders who aren't afraid to tell you what they're doing, how they're doing it, why they're doing it.
Yeah, something that, actually, you didn't put this down, but this year you raced some cyclocross. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that probably, I bet it caused a level up in terms of like your comfort on the bike. Was that something that was good for you? Do you feel like do you feel that way? Like it's going to help you this year?
Yeah, I think so. Definitely. Just the idea that you have to, get more and more comfortable with your tires and everything like that. Like, I feel like I can go back on the road and everything feels more comfortable since you're not sliding all over the place. So,
that's a good plan. Whether it's cross riding is really good for that. Mm-hmm. Mountain biking is, I would say, a second place to that, just because you usually have a wider margin of error than what you have with the road. But the nice part about cyclocross is you're always on grass, or not always, but many times on grass, slower speeds.
Crashes aren't stuff. As high a consequence as probably mountain biking.
Yeah, I'd agree.
And they're certainly not anywhere near as high a consequence as road riding.
And then I guess pack riding, just like we've talked about, improving that sort of stuff.
Yeah, that's a learn by doing thing, obviously. You have to get out there and you get into big group. And you can simulate plenty of stuff in a smaller group and just learn how to move through the field, just learn how to be in the center of a group of riders and not freak out, how to move through turns or curves or whatever, positioning well for climbs, which does mean moving through the group. I mean, because you can tell a rider, here's how you move diagonally through the group. You have to get your bars in front of the rider's hip and then the control is yours. You can tell them things like that, but until you go out and do them again and again and again, it's never going to feel fluid. It's never going to feel comfortable.
Yeah, that's truth. So these are all things that could be potentially limiters for the races that Brandon has picked. But in this case, once you figure out whatever your race goals are, you want to analyze the specific things that will happen in whatever race you're doing. So for example, if you're doing a really long time trial where you're just alone, you're probably not concerned about pack riding, right? If you're doing something that's like a Leadville, for example, very different demands. You might be riding with a pack in the beginning. You might occasionally filter in with some folks, but it's largely just a solo endeavor.
But do recognize that races like Leadville could benefit from being comfortable in a group.
Totally.
Or a pace line even.
So analyze whatever your race is and think of the demands that in terms of the course, the demands the course will present, the demands your competitors will present, and also your weaknesses, and see if any of those are limiters and how you can address them. off the bike, I guess, is the next thing you want to cover.
So that's absolutely something that should be discussed because, I mean, we are coaching an athlete here, but we're also coaching a person, trying to relate to a person. So we know, because we know Brandon,
we know
the very low hanging fruit with Brandon is probably his nutrition.
Yeah.
He's a little forgiving on himself. And part of me wants to criticize him for it. Another part of me wants to celebrate the fact that he can still get away with this stuff, still perform at a high level, still probably not metabolically damage himself because he's burning all of this.
Yeah.
And his body composition doesn't change. So he's obviously not.
Yeah. I'm sure people are like, he weighs 136 pounds. Exactly. Like, what are you saying?
But, so he can get away with it. So on the one hand, I want to say yay for you. And on the other hand, I want to say, come on, man, you can do better than this.
Yeah.
So it's a tough one.
Cause so on the nutrition side of things, break down, what Chad's talking about here, whether it's like vices or the bad habits that you have. And this part, you have to do it. You have to be honest with yourself on these things.
Or at least recognize that maybe nutrition is the chink in your army.
Totally.
You know, I race this well right now, eating the diet that I eat. Could I race better if I improve my diet?
Yeah, it's even better, right? So how do you think you could improve that? Or where do you find that you would fall short on the nutrition side?
So I'll give you guys an example. There is a tin of fudge, well, almost eaten tin of fudge in the kitchen in the office, and I can confidently say that I've eaten half of it.
Nice. Way to go.
Every time I walk by the kitchen, I'm grabbing another piece of fudge.
Nice.
Anytime anyone brings donuts into the office, I'm the first one to...
Often enough, you're that person bringing donuts into the office.
Yep, yeah. Exactly. So I certainly eat a lot of sweets.
You like your sugar. I mean, you like your refined carbohydrate, but again, I mean, you burn it. And if anybody can get away with it, it's an endurance athlete who's doing a ton of work and burning a lot of sugar. It's
granted, like you said, the question has to be asked. If you cut that out and you replace it with higher quality foods, could the performance be even better?
And as a coach, that's an experiment I would want to run for at least one season. I mean, you look at Chris Horner, he performed at a very high level, and allegations aside, let's not even contemplate that stuff. The fact is he's a very good bike racer, very capable. Yep. His diet was garbage.
Yeah.
Changed his diet, won the Giro.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying everyone's going to see that big of a response to an improved diet, but the fact is you're going to, I argue that you will see some form of improvement.
We talked a lot about this in episode 192 of the Ask a Cycling Coach podcast, where we actually talked about, you know, keeping a food diary and going through the whole process of kind of breaking it down. Because like you said, it's interesting because you're aware of the fact that you're like, yep, I ate almost half that tin, right, of fudge, but plenty of people aren't even aware of that. So if you're thinking about this and looking at your nutrition, you may eat a salad one time a day or something, and you may think I'm healthy, but then you may miss all the little snacks you get, or you may miss the fact that, you know, for dinner or something else, you eat something that's very unhealthy or something else
like that. If nutrition is something you plan to address, you have to keep a food diary for at least, you know, we recommend it a week. I like the idea of 10 days, just long enough for you to recognize what's going into your body.
Yep. Yeah, I'm sure it can improve.
Everyone's can to some
extent. Everyone, exactly. That's
except
the point.
For maybe the top echelon. Maybe Chris Froome's got it dialed, but for the rest of us.
Yeah. What about stress? So nutrition aside, talking about the stress
psychological side of things. So how do you deal with stress? Are you pretty, because we work with you, so we know roughly what the responsibilities of your job are. And we see you, and we see what your temperament is and how you act. So we have a little bit of insight that a coach maybe won't have. Mm-hmm. So you would have to describe that to me.
Yeah. How do you handle the stress, or do you feel that you have a stressful lifestyle, and how do you handle that stress?
So I am generally a pretty high stress person. I kind of run around the office all day on most days. To be honest, the exercise that I do actually helps with that. I'm a firm believer in double days. So typically first thing in the morning, I'm in here just doing a nice easy ride. And that kind of gets me going, gets me in the right mindset going into the day so that then I can run around all day.
You seem to maintain a pretty sunny disposition. So I don't think you're the sort of guy who beats himself up a lot or deals with the stress in a negative way.
I'd agree with that. Definitely.
Mm-hmm. I think that's something I've personally learned through this process of just being like every year, I feel like I can be a little more honest with myself. Maybe I'm toughening up. I don't know. But, because I feel like this is one side where, I don't process and extract stress very well. I'm good at just processing without productivity with that stress in the sense that like I just let it sit there and then I think about it too much without actually thinking about a way to solve or handle it
effectively. That's a good spin to put on it. Is your stress productive or unproductive?
Yeah. And that's something. So this is super important because when we talk about training stress, you have the training stress that you're planning to dose yourself with when you follow a training plan. But the other stresses that you have, they also totally affect things. And for you, I guess your home life, getting into that, you're recently married, right?
Yep.
But no kids.
Not yet, but,
there we go.
I get to hear about that quite a bit. So,
okay.
As a coach, we probably talk about that more soon. But yeah. As a podcast, I don't think we need to get too far into that one.
Right. Cause that's a stress. That's an absolute stress component that you would want to know about as a coach.
I would definitely want to balance it against your goals for sure.
Yeah. With a toddler, everything has changed for me. That's for sure. So,
and body composition, I don't think we need to delve into too deeply with you cause we've talked about that and you seem to be pretty okay with your diet. I don't get any hang-ups in terms of potential eating disorder or low energy availability, that concerns like that.
The one thing that I would say for this sort of thing, though, is if you are curious about, you know, on the body composition things, because the majority of people probably listen to this because Brandon's an exception, but the majority of people probably have a good amount of weight that they can lose. That's all of us kind of do.
Most of us do. At least a couple of pounds.
Yeah, meaning that, you know, there's a couple of pounds that probably aren't aiding performance. They're just hanging out on you. So in that scenario, if you are curious about the body composition side, once again, we've talked a lot about DEXA scans. Chad's kind of smiling.
Far too much.
A little too much, maybe. We've talked a lot about body composition and how to address that and how to track that with DEXA scans or certain scales. And you can search all of that as well on the podcast or on the forum, forum.trainerroad.com. What's next?
Yeah, then beyond this, I would start to look into, so we talked about psychological stress. So then I would discuss family obligations and work obligations. How thinly are you spread? Is your training time realistic? Have you carved out an amount of training time that at some point is going to break based on what else I'm seeing here? And this is something that is really going to unfold over time. You're not going to be able to look at this on paper and go, oh no, you have way too many family obligations to be able to train this much. This is something we're going to have to note and then kind of just keep tabs on. Yeah. And then what sort of support system you have. And that's pretty wide ranging. I mean, that goes from friends and family. It goes to, do you race as an individual? Do you race on a team? Is your team cohesive? Do they gel? I mean, do they work together, communicate together, train together? Different aspects of what sort of training what sort of interaction you have with your teammates, if you're even on a team.
You've been solo in the past. Are you on a team this year?
Not this year. No. Okay. I've never really been part of a team, so I've kind of just done the solo thing. So,
and see, that's really interesting because in the sort of races he wants to work, maybe as a Cat 2 that works. He advances up to the Pro 1-2 races, and he's not part of
not
a team.
So much.
It's not to say it can't work, but it's
going to be very tough.
Super tough, right. Super tough. That's the time where it's. Necessitates a jump to a team if you haven't made one already.
I could see the suggestion to an individual who is in your situation of like joining a team. It would have to be the right team, of course, because it would have to align with your fitness and then your objectives and everything else. But it could be beneficial because it could address a few of the limiters in terms of, you know, pack riding or the tactics and strategy or bike handling, that sort of stuff. You know, when you ride with that team more regularly, it could help. But just the same, in your situation, at least locally, I don't think there's a team that would help you necessarily. So
you'd probably be part of a regional team, and that comes with its own set of challenges. But the fact is, you have access to good training, good coach. That might not be as big a limitation for you as it would be for some riders. I don't think you need, I mean, you're not here actually looking for a coach, but even as a coach, I would probably recognize that you don't need a heck of a lot of direction. You're doing a pretty good job on your own. At some point, I think everyone can benefit from it. Whether or not they actually need it is another question.
Yeah. I think one of the other things that's been tough about the whole team or no team thing for me is being part of a regional team comes with its own set of obligations. And
yeah, it does.
That's another thing that can make things a little bit tougher.
I personally struggled with it, so yeah. I can relate, yeah.
It's really hard because then basically the priorities that you have set out, you don't necessarily get to chase those all the time.
It's not just your schedule. I mean, certain things don't fall within how it, they don't set up the way you'd like them to. And you have to start making time to accommodate other schedules, and that it sets its own form of stress. It's its own stressor.
And to be frank, it's kind of fun to race solo sometimes.
They both have their upsides for sure.
Yeah, it is kind of fun, you know. So I guess at this point, looking at the racing calendar ahead, right?
Yeah. So
dates on these things, because now you know
exactly. We know what events he's targeting.
What needs to be done, right?
Exactly right, and we know where he's coming from. Got a pretty good basis of information. So now we plot things on a calendar and start stepping back and planning your training.
That makes sense. So I guess the first event that you'll have that's one of your targeted events is San Dimas Stage Race, and that's March 29th through 31st. So it's pretty soon. I guess kind of stepping back from this.
12 weeks out. So he's got enough time for some solid training.
I guess let's talk about within the train road context, the plans that we would select or suggest that a person follow for this. We should probably identify what the ideal training track is, then look at the calendar, right?
Sure. What we think would suit Brandon best.
Yeah. So we break up our training into three phases, a base phase, a build phase, and a specialty phase. At the end of that, you've reached peak fitness. Everything's great to go. But you can race certainly before then and still have incredible performances. Mm-hmm. So sweet spot base is probably the suggestion that you would make.
Yeah. And Brandon, high volume makes the most sense because you can tolerate a heavy training load. And it also makes sense because the high volume one isn't varied at all. It's basically all sweet spot work, but that doesn't matter because you don't really have any intention to race super competitively inside of this next 12 weeks. Mm. I mean, I'm a little concerned that, well, no, you're already training. So if we were starting right now and that 12 weeks led you right up to San Dimas, I'd be concerned and we'd change things around a little bit, mm-hmm. but you're at least 6 weeks.
Yeah.
You said 6 weeks into it,
yep.
which means mm-hmm. you have another 6 weeks of this high volume work that's specifically sweet spot work. And that leaves us another 6 weeks to start tailor some more specific fitness towards San Dimas.
You'd be very fast by San Dimas time with your current schedule. It'd be pretty cool. For the specialty side of things, which I guess, you know, in this case, since the race is coming up sooner, just imagine if you're listening to this, that you'd be in the scenario where you have enough time to be mm-hmm. able to finish this.
Well, do you want to discuss the build?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
You can do that. Yeah. Let's do build first then. Okay. Forgive me. Yeah.
So Brandon is in a situation where he's already good at the sustained power stuff. So this would be the time where I'd have the conversation. Do you want to change how you tactically approach a race? Mm. You want to be a little more volatile, a little more explosive, more of an animator? Do you want to make things happen as opposed to following them? Because a sustained power rider typically has to follow what, you know, pick up what others lay down.
Kind of like Chris Froome in many respects is kind of the approach
you see him show. A few years ago, Chris Froome, yeah.
Yep. Yeah, he's dynamic now.
Yeah, he is. And that's the question. That's a really good example. Do you want to go that direction? Do you want to be more of a live wire? In which case, we might sway you away from a sustained power build and push you into something either... I don't know that I'd ever go as far as short power, but maybe a general build would be a better fit considering you want to develop different capacities.
Yeah, because it's... part, you know, when you're weighing which ones to pick, it's part what the course will give you. And like we said before, part what the pack will give you. And then also part how you plan to race this, which hopefully you're in the liberty rich position to be able to say, I will race it this way and not, I will just try to hang on. Right. And then on the specialty plan for this sort of stuff, I definitely feel like our climbing road race plan addresses the majority of these. Cause
suits it pretty well.
San Dimas Stage Race. That TT is important, that climbing TT. And then on that road race, it's, even though it's got rolling hills and a steep one, it's really about, you know, sustained long, you know, power, right? That's
so
what really matters.
Leading up to San Dimas, and you're not going to have time to specialize before then. You just don't have that.
No, I don't even think I was going to hit a specialty phase. Probably only like 5 weeks of build, to be honest. Right.
Exactly.
So
that's the time.
And that's, yeah, and so that's perfectly.
That's why we would direct your specialty towards different demands. Mm-hmm. Cascade being probably it, right? Because we're talking May. So another couple of months of training. So that would allow you to get into a specialty plan. And that's where you have to decide, you know, Cascade, I don't know if they still start with the TT. I don't think they do. I think that's the second stage.
Yeah, that's a good
idea. But it's a more traditional TT. So so this is where aerodynamics, as opposed to strength to weight ratio, like at San Dimas, the aerodynamics to strength ratio becomes more of a concern. Mm-hmm. So this is where we might start sprinkling in to the specialty plan some more time trial specific workouts, at least one a week, getting you in position, seeing if you can generate power, seeing, you know, maybe contemplating your aerodynamics, looking at them a bit.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Depending. I mean, if it's just a single race, how pivotal will that time trial be? Because now that they've shifted it away from the first day or the first stage, it's actually not as of as much consequence.
Right.
So you don't have to be like a time trial specialist to get the jersey and then do your best to hold the jersey.
So you want to weigh these options depending on what your race is. If it's a stage race and you have these different ones, you want to weigh them.
And not just, you know, does it contain a time trial, but what is the time trial like and when does that time trial fall in the sequence of stages?
Yeah. And then the last race that would be on your calendar, significant race. You could race all you want outside of this within reason and with wisdom. But Haute Route Rockies, and that's June 22nd to 28th. So that gives you almost a month after Cascade where you can stretch your training along.
It's pretty nice. Yeah, so we just see like maybe a week-long downturn and then start to ramp things back up in earnest for at least two, maybe three of those weeks leading into Haute Route.
Maybe repeating the final building weeks of that specialty.
Very
phase.
Probably, yeah. Mm-hmm. Just repeat them unless you stumbled onto something over the course of racing Cascade that you said, I really need to work on that because that will hinder me at Haute Route.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I think that covers it.
I think so.
Less.
Yeah.
So once again, hopefully this process has educated you a little bit on the self-review process that all of us do here at Trainer Road. Chad's been mentioning it from the context of how, you know, he has coached athletes in the past. Coach Chad doesn't get the chance to coach athletes individually anymore.
No, I've gotten to the point where I don't understand how there are plenty of coaches who do this really well. I don't know how they make a living doing it because it's so time intensive. I mean, it's a lot of work. Super impressed.
So with that said, don't be sending emails to Chad asking Chad to coach you. The goal with this is to teach you to fish, right? So what we're trying to do here is teach you the principles that we use when we review ourselves and then look ahead at the year and the races that we have and then plan them out accordingly. If you do have any questions on this, though, please, you can submit them at trainerroad.com/podcast. If you want to be a person on one of these athlete analysis interviews with Coach Chad, you can let us know too. I'm sure that we'll get plenty of people volunteering for that. So you can do that. Once again, trainerroad.com/podcast. If you have any questions about this, this interview or anything else, you can find it on forum.trainerroad.com and there'll be discussion all about that. Brandon might even jump in there. If you have any questions for Brandon, please jump in. He certainly has an interesting history as an athlete. So if you're a triathlete that's moving to road, that sort of thing could definitely be interesting. But thanks for joining us, and we will talk to you next time.
Yeah, thanks, everybody.
Thanks.